This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in beautiful and glorious Clearwater, Florida. And I'm really happy today because I have in the studio with me Bill Larson from Larson & Larson, and we have some big news about Bill. Wow. I just was reading that Larson & Larson is, they've been part of the U.S. News Best Lawyers, and, right?
That's correct.
You've been ranked up there for your litigation work and intellectual property. Fantastic.
Thank you.
This is a really big thing because that means you're one of the best law firms in the country.
Thank you.
And I always knew it.
Thank you.
So it's a great honor for your firm and for you and, of course, all the people that work in your firm. And as my listeners know, that I have 4 patents, and in addition to the intellectual property work that Bill does for me, he also does the patent work for me and for our family. And so I just want to say that we've always known that he was one of the best lawyers, and so we're so happy that you got this award.
Thank you.
Okay. So what's new with you, Bill? What are you going to talk to us about today?
Very interesting case here. And it deals with the ever-going question of where is the line between copying and concepts, right? Public domain concepts. And in this particular case, this involves the movie The Light Between Oceans, or really the novel of The Light Between Oceans, which was written by M.L. Stedman, which is a pseudonym for Margaret Louise Watts. Okay? Well, a Joseph Noble brought a copyright infringement case against Ms. Watts and DreamWorks for the screenplay of The Light Between Oceans, alleging that it infringed Mr. Noble's novel, The Root Cutter. All right? That was registered in 2004. All right. So Mr. Noble sued the author and Simon & Schuster, the publisher, alleging that there was an infringement. Okay, and the case went to court, and it was dismissed. Okay, the court found that there was no copyright infringement. And there was a very interesting analysis that the court used in this case to try to determine whether or not there was copying. All right, so what did the court say in this case? Well, first they took a look at the characters and the plot and certain things, and they found that in Noble's work, the copyrighted work, the earlier work, it's described as a barren couple living on a rugged island off the coast of Ireland. And there is a traumatic and violent stillborn birth. These are some of the common elements that were going to be in both of the works. The husband finds a woman in labor on a sailboat by the shore, and the husband assists in the delivery. And then the woman dies. The husband decides to keep the baby boy and persuades his wife to do so as well. When the couple attempts to leave the island with the baby, they're caught in a terrible storm, and the baby falls off a steep hill and dies. Okay, that's the underlying work.
Whoa, right. Dramatic, so, got a lot of things. A
lot of drama in there, okay. And now we have The Light Between Oceans, okay, which is a couple isolated in a lighthouse off of Australia. The wife suffers miscarriages and delivers a stillborn child. And one day, the couple finds a small boat containing a baby girl and a dead man. The wife decides to keep the baby, and the couple raises her for their own on the island for several years. Sooner or later, on the mainland, folks find out about this, and the couple's secret is discovered, and the girl is returned to her birth mother. All right? So there are some similarities, and there are some differences. So where do you draw the line? All right, well, the court took a look at it, and the court said, this is how we're going to analyze it. We're going to compare the plot, the sequence, the pace, the setting, the characters, the theme, and the total concept and feel. So those are the elements that we're going to look at in both works to see whether or not there's copying. Because remember, in copyright cases, no one's ever going to admit they copied, right? And you never have evidence of actual copying. So the only way that you can tell if one's been copied from the other is really circumstantial evidence, right? Not direct evidence. They're so similar that there's no way that the second work couldn't have been copied from the first. It has to be, all right? But what you have to keep in mind is that there are certain public domain themes and concepts which you can use and are not copying, all right? And that is part of what the courts decided in this case, all right? Okay. First of all, the court said that it's very difficult to establish copyright infringement between characters, okay? And the reason is, we've discussed before, the law doesn't give a lot of protection in characters, okay? They just don't. The character would have to be so specialized and personal to that work that it would be difficult to copy them. All right. And the court found that the husband and wife in the screenplay are archetypes rather than well-developed characters, that the characters are developed differently, and in The Light Between Oceans, there's more supporting characters than there is in Root Cutter, and they're more highly developed, okay? And the court observed that the works have similar theme of the consequences of a couple taking a child as their own, that's not theirs, when they cannot have children of their own, but that concept is not copyrightable, okay? So it's not protectable, right? And we've talked about themes before. So the theme about a couple that can't have children and finds a baby and adopts it for their own and eventually pays the consequences, that theme in and of itself is not protectable, okay? So you could write your own book, your own screenplay with that theme, as long as your plot and your sequence and your pace and your setting and and these other elements are different. Okay, and so that's where the court's drawing the line between the use of themes that other people have used, even if you copy them, right? Because if they're public domain, you can still copy them, right? Because you could only copy them if they're copyright protectable, right? They have to be a certain unique quality to them, and not everything is unique enough in the eyes of the law to be protectable. All right, so in this case, there was one of the other issues was the total concept and feel, and the judge felt that there was no reason to send this to the jury, that the judge himself determined that there was not enough similarities to constitute copyright infringement, and the case was dismissed.
And but there was a jury impaneled?
No. In many of these cases, these copyright cases, they're decided by the judge. All right, and the judge will only send it to the jury if the judge thinks that it's close enough a call. But in many of these cases, particularly recently, the judges have looked at these cases and said, there's enough here for me to say that we don't need a jury in this case. They're not close enough.
Okay.
And the judge dismisses
the case. Because probably, do you think a jury would have found differently?
It's possible, yeah.
Because they're both a lighthouse, right?
No, one's in a lighthouse, one's on an island.
An island.
All right, so there's similarities and there's differences.
Okay, but they're both islands and they're one.
Right, but I think what we're seeing here in the information age is that the courts are getting a little bit more strict on how you prove copyright infringement. You got to really have some really strong similarities, substantial similarities, and you have to probably need a little direct evidence of copying.
Okay, and so the name of the book is...
The original book was called The Root Cutter. That was the copyrighted work. And then the work accused of infringement was The Light Between Oceans, which went on to be a very famous movie.
Exactly. Now, The Root Cutter, would the person, the author, of course, could never find a connection that anybody who did the movie...
No, there was no evidence of any direct infringement. In other words, direct copying. Yes, I stole the work. I intentionally did this.
Yeah, nobody will say that. But
right,
but for
right.
example, if the would the author be able to subpoena Amazon for a list of who bought the book?
They could, but it has to pass the gate, which is the judge. So if the judge says there's insubstantial similarities between the two works, the judge doesn't care if you copied it. He'll say there's still not enough similarities, even if you did. So the judge is kind of the gatekeeper to let you get through.
But would that work? For example, if you think, okay, I think this is really close to my book, and I would like to know if Joe Smith read this book, Will Amazon release that information to you without a subpoena, or you have to subpoena?
No, it would have to be in the discovery process of the litigation, yes. You would serve a subpoena, and they would be forced to give up any communications and such. But in this case, the judge didn't allow that to happen. The judge noted that there was only really one sentence in the two works that was the same, was, "I hate this place." Other than that, there was no common dialogue or such. So the judge made the call that, "We're not going to let this case go forward. We're not going to take any discovery. I'm shutting the gate. I'm dismissing the case. There's insubstantial similarities," as he ruled, as a matter of law. No need to go to the jury. Not enough facts.
I think if you had a jury trial,
it could turn out differently.
It would have turned out the opposite. Because
it's possible.
Just thinking about it, I would, first, if I was a juror, I'd say, okay, did this person... Or did anybody in the production company, having dealt with production companies and movie production companies, I can tell you that they will steal anything. I mean, they would steal their grandmother's toys. You know, so, I would say that the first thing I'd do if I was an author, I would demand that the list of who bought the book.
Yes, that would typically happen in the discovery process, if you can get past the judge. So the judge gets the first decision making in the case. So if the judge looks at it and says, "Nope, not enough here for me," the judge can kill the case right there. Never go to a jury.
But you could appeal.
Yes, you can file an appeal to the motion to dismiss, arguing that the judge abused his discretion in making the decision. And then the appeals court will take a look at it and say, "Well, yeah, maybe we should let it go to a jury."
And then Amazon would have to give the...
And then it would go back to the trial court, and then they could do their discovery and try to get that direct evidence that you suggest.
I mean, if you had a case like that, would you subpoena the Amazon records?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, because the discovery process is the process where you try to root out that really good evidence that you wouldn't have otherwise, because it's private to that company. Yeah. It's in their computer.
Because the odds are, if they've read the book, they bought it through Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Right, and so that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that direct evidence that they had it, because otherwise the defendant will always say it's just coincidence. I'm using a common theme, and some of the characters are coincidental.
Huh. I think that would be an interesting case to fight.
These are very interesting cases to fight. You know, and it's not like copyrights in art where you can look at it and look at the other one and say, "Wow, I really visually see the similarities." And here, you really have to feel the similarities. And that's why it's so tough when we're deciding copyright cases of novels versus screenplays versus films.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me, if I were to take a book, I would actually make those changes, because I think that the other ending wasn't as dramatic as this ending. So it's exactly the type of thing a screenplay writer would take the book and then add these little.
It's not unusual in screenplays that they're going to adapt the work in a way to make it more
a little more feelable, cinematic, a little more dramatic.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly. You rarely see a movie that is word verbatim of a novel.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. There's only one book that I would love to see done verbatim, exactly as the book is written. It drives me crazy because I see this book as a movie in my head. Mm-hmm. And it's called Syracusa by Delia Ephron. And I think it should be just, I would just take that
Don't
book.
Don't change anything.
I wouldn't change anything.
I think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is another example where the movie tried to stay very true to the original novel.
Yes, and not, that's true. You know. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's an interesting business, isn't it?
Very, very
intellectual
interesting.
Property.
And there's, you know, it's more to it than just law. You know, you really have to have an artistic or a real feeling for it.
Yes, I can see that.
Because the law is really black and white and kind of, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Impersonal.
Hey, Ed, do I have a caller? Okay. Well, we have an author who wants to ask Bill a question. Donna, are you there?
I am.
Okay, Donna. Bill Larson's right here in the studio, so do you want to ask him your question?
Thank you. Yes, I am a children's author, and I understand when you write a book, you know, it's copyrighted and all, but that a title cannot be copyrighted. And I'm wondering about that. The title is also my main character, and I'm going to try to figure out how I can protect that character.
Okay, good question. And that's true. The law does not recognize copyrights and titles. And that's just a decision as a matter of policy that the laws have made. And I think the reasoning is that you could have a completely different work under the same title. Okay, and we do. We have music under the same title. We have characters sometimes that have the same names. We have titles of books and records, all kinds of stuff that are the same. So I think just as a matter of public policy, the government has decided and made laws such that you can't protect that. So in your case, it will be very challenging to protect the title of your book. But what you can protect is, as we just discussed here, the theme and the plot and the setting, some of the characters. But in order to protect characters, the court has said it's a very high bar because for the same reasons, characters could have similarities in different types of books, even though there's no copying. So in your case, yeah, it's going to be very difficult to specifically copyright your character or specifically copyright your title or even trademark it. And that's just one of the gaps in the law that we have to live with.
Now, in for example, Donna's case, if her characters are, if she wants to take it to the next level and, for example, make stuffed animals out of her characters.
Yes.
How would she do that? What would she need to do to protect that part?
And that's a trademark. And that's basically what Disney has done. All right. So using Disney as an example, Mickey Mouse was a copyright. But Mickey Mouse changed into something more than just a copyright. It turned into plush animals and cups and all kinds of things. So, yes, you can protect characters if you can get trademarks in them if they become products themselves. But as long as they're just characters in the book, you cannot protect them.
So the idea is to make them, because if you want to merchandise this, particularly with children's books, so many times they are characters that
become plush animals or become toys.
They can make a lot more, has happened with many children's authors, the merchandise has made more money than the books.
Right. And so what we have to realize is that the law is not comprehensive. Okay? There's always going to be little gaps and little pieces that you can't protect, and that's just the decision that we've made in creating our laws. And in the area of copyright and trademark, you can't title. Now, in the area of trademark, you can protect the title of your books if they're in a series. Okay, one of the famous ones is For Dummies, Computers for Dummies, Dogs for Dummies, you know, all that. So the For Dummies part in the title is protectable. So I can't write another book saying some word and dummies. But that exception is for a book that comes out in a series and not a single title.
Ah.
So Gone with the Wind is the name of a title of a book. Okay, you can't protect that. I could write a book called Gone with the Wind as long as it was not the same in concept and feel and sequence and character and theme as the original novel.
Okay, so since Donna intends to write a series of books, all right, one of her books has come out without sort of a title in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Can she go back now and say,
if it's coming out in a series and the title is going to be the same for all the series and it's going to be one, two, or an addition of another word, like in my For Dummies example,
okay,
then yes, we could trademark it so that no one else could put out a series of children's books with that title.
Ah, so that
it has to be a series.
Okay. That's an idea for you, Donna.
And the protection is trademark, not copyright in this case, because the titles are never copyrightable.
Okay.
Now, in terms of just simple rights, like when I created this book, I had the illustrations done from a firm that does custom artwork, and my contract with them, which I requested, said that they were done specifically for the client and that the client has all rights to reproduce. I'm just wondering now, rights to reproduce, I'm assuming meant also to reproduce that image, say, on a t-shirt or
okay,
a coffee mug or something of that sort.
And I understand the question. And so then that would go to the particular language of the contract, whether there was any reservation of rights by the artist who made the work for you. So in order to tell what the extent of your rights are and if anything was withheld, I'd have to actually review the words of the contract, because you could do either or. You can give a partial right and you can reserve rights. So maybe I give you the copyright to use the characters for the purpose of your book, but not for plush toys and not for other products.
So if it's just a general, I'm paying you for doing these illustrations and they all belong to me, that's not necessarily covering everything.
That's right. It's not necessarily covering everything.
So then you could find yourself someday selling a lot of merchandise and the illustrator artist coming back to you and saying, I want 50%.
Right, because I didn't give you that right. And so the kind of the magic words that we look for in the contracts is all right, title, and interest. That's kind of a special combination of magic words, which means you got it all.
All right.
Yeah,
title.
All right, title, and interest.
All right, title, and interest.
Those are
the
magic words that we look for. But if it just says that you're granted the ownership of the drawings themselves and doesn't mention anything else, then there could be an argument made that they reserve some rights.
Okay, so
that's
it is something.
Part of contracts, yeah.
It's something to think about before you put a lot of time, energy, and money into merchandising.
Right. So when we write contracts, we put exhaustive language in there with just a litany of words that says, it makes it clear that our client, when they pay for this stuff, they get it all, 100%.
Would it make sense for an author to get further legal help? For example, you know, I had not done any kind of merchandising or anything of that sort, but let's say I wanted to in the future. Would it make sense to get legal help and say, okay, these people that I had the contract with, here's what the contract states. I'm now going forward to do other things. Therefore, we'd like you to sign this more complete contract. Do people do that midway like that?
Yes, you could do that. Yeah, there's always room to change and modify depending on the circumstances. And so, yes, the default setting is make sure a lawyer looks at the contract, and that's whether or not you're dealing with a publisher or if you're dealing with an artist who's creating graphics or any kind of characters or drawings for your books. There's some what we call magic words in there, and if they're not in there, you're not going to get all the rights that you deserve. And you'll need a lawyer that's proficient in copyright law and contract law to make sure that if what you believe you're purchasing is everything, the whole kit and caboodle, that you're actually getting that. And the way to make sure is that the contract's properly drafted.
And I will second that. You must absolutely have a lawyer before you. It's better to do all the legal stuff in front than in back. Because once you are selling, and if you have a product, as I think you hope that you have, that is going to last for many years, you want to make sure that everything is covered beforehand, because people get greedy, and once they see that you're making money, they come back quickly, don't they, Bill?
Well, one of the issues we also have is in the example of co-authorship. Okay, let's say we work together to create a book. Well, if I don't assign all of my rights to you or you don't me, then we share them in an undivided way, which means you go off and do anything you want and I can go off and do anything I want. We can't stop each other, all right? And so whenever you're working, the default setting is whenever you're working with another person in any aspect of your business, and there's going to be some kind of an agreement, okay, where rights and obligations are created. I'm going to give you something, and you're going to give me something. Get it in writing. Make sure a lawyer looks at it, and then it'll be right.
Exactly. Well, Don, I want to thank you for calling in. I hope that I know that Bill's advice will help you to think now clearly about the next step forward. And Bill is always available.
Larson Patent Law.
LarsonPatentLaw.
.com.
And he will be happy to sit down with you and have a free consultation first to tell you what you need to know about protecting your rights. And I want to thank Bill so much for coming in today.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Bill.
Okay.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Okay. Well, Bill, this is wonderful. Thanks. That was great.
My pleasure.
Good advice, and I have a feeling, I have seen her book, and I have a feeling it has a very long lifespan if she does it right.
Excellent. Yeah, but get those copyright applications filed. That's important. The caller mentioned that, you know, copyright is afforded just by creation, but it's perfected by registration.
Exactly.
Which in perfection we means it's protectable.
Okay. Well, this was an interesting show today. We learned a lot of stuff, and I want to thank you so much for coming in today, Bill.
My pleasure. Great to see you again.
Okay, we'll see you again next month. And everybody, if you have a question, send it to me at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and we'll ask Bill. Or you can call in like Donna did. That was great. Okay, we're going to go to a commercial, and then I'll be right back.
is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back, and boy, do I have a lot of people here in the studio today. First, Larson and Larson, with Bill Larson of Larson and Larson was here, and his beautiful wife joined him, but she's still not talking, but I'm going to get her to talk next month, absolutely. And now in the studio, I have Eli Gonzalez, and I'm so happy to have you here, Eli, and you have with you three authors who are going to be appearing at the Barnes & Noble, right?
Yes, yes. Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us again.
Okay.
And I'm so happy with the three authors that we have. Usually they're clients of mine. As you know, I'm a ghostwriter and they're clients of mine. These three authors are not clients. They wrote and edited and did their own books. And I am so impressed with them as people and their books that they're in this book signing event at Barnes & Noble.
Wow, that's nice of you.
Well, you know, I just like to roll with quality people.
Well, I think that's fantastic. And as my listeners know, Eli, you are always right there with the ability to help people bring their stories to life. And that's always exciting. Before I let you go and start talking to, do you want to introduce the three people who are going to be talking, or shall I just let them do it?
They're more than capable of doing it themselves.
Okay. But let's do mention your website so that people who are interested in finding a ghostwriter can come to you.
Yes, it is www.theghostpublishing.com. And I also have my school that teaches people how to make a living as a writer. And that's at the International Ghostwriters Association.com.
Okay, great. We'll mention it again before the show ends.
But, sure.
Let's turn now first to Michael McCoy. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay, great. Well, Michael came in with these wonderful sunglasses. I like sunglasses that make a statement.
I think Michael thought this was TV. Look how well-dressed he is.
Well, he's on camera here.
Oh, there he is.
I got my haircut just for this.
Well, so. No, you are on camera. We have the podcast going up there, too.
Brilliant,
so,
perfect.
Yeah, sure, that's fine. So, Eli, you can move out to the other chair
kick
if you want,
out.
And then, yeah, kick Alex. Him out, and then we'll have Alex sit here, too, because we have Michael McCoy who's going to talk about his book called The Picture-Perfect Headshot, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, maybe we'll then have to do that little. Sit down. Why, this is a lot of people today. And so we have also Alex Rodriguez. But let's start with you, Michael, because I think I was looking at the website, and this is exciting work that you're doing.
Absolutely. I really love to focus with business professionals and really just teach them how to make the best first impression possible. My main focus is on guiding business professionals to hone in their facial expressions and really communicate through the camera and through their corporate headshot.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, we all need that. And I was looking at your website. You have some beautiful work. So your book,
thank you.
What does your book do for people?
My book really dives into everything you need to know to look like a celebrity in front of the camera and make the best first impression possible. So that includes everything from personal branding and managing your reputation to what to wear in a headshot and different hairstyles for a headshot. And there's a lot of really cool pictures in there identifying different hairstyles, retouching before and afters, and just everything you need to know around headshot photography.
Wow. And so you've been, you obviously love photography. Have you been doing this since you were young?
He
looks like a baby now.
Yes, I've been behind a camera since I was 12 years old. I was doing weddings on my own when I was about 14. And from there, once I figured out that people wouldn't pay me to do something that I really enjoy, there wasn't any question as to doing anything else.
Now, have you found that there's like a specific color that people should wear when they're going for a headshot?
Absolutely. So when you go in for a headshot, definitely stick to more natural colors. Nothing bright or fluorescent, as it can be distracting. And the real focus is on your face and your expression. And also avoiding busy pattern really helps out. Just in conveying or communicating with the person on the other side of the picture.
And, you know, people are always afraid when they're doing a headshot, whether to open their mouth and smile with their teeth or not smile
right,
with their
right.
teeth.
Absolutely. So honing in on a good corporate headshot really fundamentally conveys trust. It conveys confidence and approachability. And confidence so that people know you're the best at what you do, and approachability so they know you can relate on a personal level. So having that foundation really gives you a lot of room to build and make the best first impression.
And when people come to you for a headshot, and what's the name of your studio so people?
It's MP Studios Tampa.
And that's...
Yep, and we're located in downtown Tampa, just off Madison, Florida.
Okay, and What do you find? Are people always very nervous when they're coming in for a headshot?
It depends on how experienced you are in front of the camera. Some people are, especially business professionals, can be a bit more reserved. So really it's about drawing them out of their shell and letting them realize that, you know, we can take a few bad pictures, but the difficult part is going to be at the end of the session, not picking a good one. It's narrowing down all the good ones. So we're going to get more good ones than you can keep and really focusing those down into getting the picture perfect headshot.
So like when you're doing a headshot like that, sometimes it doesn't take too long and then other times does it take a long time?
Yes, absolutely. It really depends on the person and each headshot's very customized and individualized for the business owner and the business as a whole.
So that's you know, I think that's an exciting business because it is important nowadays, of course, everybody has a website and everybody needs to have their photo up there.
Absolutely. Just having that online presence, it's really about reputation management and drawing in people's attention. So it's what people think about you when they hear your name and what image comes to mind.
Well, I think it's a fascinating book, a fascinating idea. People don't think in advance, really. I mean, they'll set up an appointment to go for their headshot. But to have a book like this so that they can understand the process beforehand, it starts to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a very simple 5-step process that I outline in the book, which goes from everything to publishing the picture to the persona that you emote and your facial expressions and really dives into just the process and taking a good picture.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to go to Tampa. I think I need you. You're good. I really think you're really great.
Thank you. It's
going to be really exciting for you to be having a book signing.
Yes, absolutely. I'm really excited about the book signing on the 9th, which is just around the corner. Really excited to go there and really just present what the book's all about and show it in all of its glory.
Oh, well, I think it's fantastic. And it's called The Picture Perfect Headshot. And I'm sure that it's going to be a really good seller because there are so many people who need that
Absolutely.
Perfect picture.
Cameras are everywhere, and I think everybody needs a little bit of help in front of the camera. And you know, having this book to just really look back on and see what it takes to
make
an
impression. A selfie is not good enough. You can't get away with doing a selfie.
Yeah, not when you're definitely not when you're representing a business, but for sharing with friends, that's more than acceptable. Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, Michael, for being here today. And in a minute, we're going to switch chairs because I only have two chairs. And Lil Barkowski is going to come and take that chair. But I'm going to turn over to Alex Rodriguez.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Okay. It's my joy to have you. And I love your sunglasses. It's so cool. My son would wear those kind of sunglasses all the time. Something interesting.
Absolutely.
So you obviously know how to make your face interesting.
Thank you.
And now I've got another handsome guy here in the studio.
Well, thank you for that.
Okay, Alex Rodriguez, and you have a book called Sell You Before You Sell.
That is correct.
Which is a good idea. And again, one of the things you need is a good headshot. Yes. So we're going to talk about your book. What's your background, and how did you come up with this idea to...
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to the show, and thank you for Eli Gonzalez for always putting resources that are for, you know, authors to really put up their platform and help them succeed. My background is over two decades in the marketing and advertising business. I have a marketing firm in Tampa, also in downtown Tampa, called Yummy Marketing, YMMYmarketing.com, and we help our clients raise their visibility, evolve their brand, and tell their story in an impactful manner. After publishing my first book, which is Digital Bacon, it was Amazon bestseller in four different categories, two different languages. It's even required readings in some higher education institutions. I decided to publish a book, which is this book that you have right in front of you, about the intersection between personal branding and sales. So many people in business want to understand how to improve their closing rates, how to open more opportunities, but they're still doing the traditional sales thing where they're contacting people cold and then sitting down at the table, trying to persuade them to buy. And this is not the methodology that works today. What works today is selling yourself and then selling your products and services. Business is all about relationships. And relationships start about knowing each other in an authentic and real manner. So this is a quick premise of what the book is all about.
And now let's pick up some things that are really important for people to know.
Absolutely. Well, I'll go really quickly through what I call the four essential qualities of a good personal brand. So the four essential qualities are simply, number one, your brand needs to be authentic. It needs to be real. Nobody wants to fool around with fake or just, you know, things that are manufactured or synthetic, like I like to call. It's all about being real and transparent. And real and transparent, both the good and the bad, is very well received in today's day and age. So that's the first one. The second one is being attractive. And being attractive is knowing who your audience is. And this goes as well to literature writers. You know, who are you? Who's your audience? Who are you trying to reach? And understanding deeply their needs, their concerns, their desires, what problems they have, and catering to them in our messaging and the products that we offer. The third one is about alignment. It's about being aligned. We have to demonstrate our value in every different touch point that our potential customers have with us. We have to demonstrate what our value is. So many people are out there using other people's attention, talking about sports or politics or things like that, which is fine. We're all fans of one thing or another at one point in time. But do people understand when they need to hire your services? Do they know where to reach you? That's what you need to do in terms of alignment. And the last one, real quickly, is about awesomeness. It's about being unique, about being different, not being mediocre, or the same, doing the same things that everybody else is doing, but distinguishing yourself because of your excellence.
Okay, well, this is, it's an exciting premise to think about, really to sell you before you sell. Before you decide to sell.
Yes.
Your book is going to be also yours. You're at the same book signing on
yes,
the 9th,
right? Yes, December 9, 11 a.m. in Barnes & Noble, Clearwater Barnes & Noble. We'd be very, very happy. A bunch of people are going to come over. But if you ever want, you know, resources that are for like Mike's book or my book or Lil's book that are for improving yourself and stepping forward, this is the place to be for sure.
Absolutely. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Well, yeah, for now they could go to our business website, which is YMMYmarketing.com, YummyMarketing.com, and they can find more about us.
Okay. Well, I think the book sounds very interesting, and I hope that people will turn out for it. And
thank you so much.
That you'll have lots of fun. It's always fun to have a book signing. Now,
maybe so.
Okay, so we might talk a little bit more after I talk a little bit to Lil Barkowski. And you have a very long title. Why Are Women Leaving You for Me and How to Get Me Back? Is that?
Get Them Back.
Get Them Back. Okay, Get Them Back. Okay, that's a nice long title. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about your book.
Well, I'm here. I live here in Dunedin, Florida. I've been writing this book for quite a long time now, about a year.
It's your first book.
It's my first nonfiction book.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. I write plays actually most of the time. I'm a fairly well-known playwright in the area.
Okay. I love plays. I'm not sure. Maybe. You know, I think maybe I've been to something you've written
very possible. I'm very involved with the theater community here.
Okay. Well, my boys used to be in a little theater. We were in. The entire family was in a production at the St. Petersburg Little Theater.
Sure.
We were in The Fiddler in the Roof.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I know a lot of people from down there. So,
and that was a wonderful experience. And anybody who really wants to have fun, get involved in theater. I think it's the coolest business.
It's the coolest business ever.
It is, absolutely. So tell us about your book.
Well, for years I made jokes about writing a book because most of the women I dated were more or less with men most of the time, and they were disgruntled, and a lot of times they sort of just gravitated to people like me. And I think my experiences over a lifetime of dating a lot of different kinds of women and getting very friendly with men, because men find me very easy to talk to. I'm kind of one of the guys, if you will. So this kind of put me in a position where I'm on both camps a lot of the time. And over the years, I've watched men have, I guess we're seeing it really badly now with the demise of Charlie Rose and Matt Lauer, and men are just struggling, I think, to communicate with women. It's not that they're bad or that they don't want to communicate with women. They just don't seem to have an inside track to it. So this book is very funny. Obviously, a lot of it is humorous, and it's meant to disarm that whole thing of sort of how do we talk to women and do better with them, get them to appreciate us. I really think most women would like to have a nice relationship with a man, and I think most men need to have a nice relationship with a woman. The women can manage without a guy, but a man sort of struggles when he doesn't have a really good woman in his life. So this sort of is just a fun way to talk to guys about everything. I like to say everything from no man buns to misogyny. It's a little bit of everything from how do you treat a woman, how do you pay attention to a woman, what is she really looking for from you, and how do you groom yourself to be just as gorgeous as our headshot guy?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Both of them.
Both of these guys.
All three of them. There's three people here.
I was going to say you.
Comb your hair.
Three gorgeous guys.
Clean your house.
It's nice to have three gorgeous guys here in the studio.
All the titles are fun. You know, they're fun titles talking about everything from really, what do you do when a woman has children and they're not your children? How do you deal with that when you date a woman with children? How do you talk to your own children? They're a part of your life. And just the grooming and shoes.
Okay,
I love shoes. I'm a shoe person.
It sounds like a fascinating book, and it's called, okay, you say
I'll say it. It's called Why Are Women Are Leaving You for Me and How to Get Them Back. It's a practical adulting guide for men.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Well, Eli, this is going to be a fun signing. Are these the only three authors there that day, or you have more?
Actually, I'll be the fourth. I'll be talking about a book that I wrote for a Holocaust survivor. The name of the book is Undaunted. It is a story of just the evilest of what men can produce, and a story of the spirit to live, and the will, the resiliency that the human beings possess. It's a true account of a Holocaust survivor.
And
her name is Jarmaine Pichon, and she is still alive, but was supposed to make the event, but at this point in time, she needs medical care. Yeah. I'm honored. My name is on the cover of this book. I'm honored to be the author of the writer for the book. She's the author. It's her content. It's her life story. I wrote her biography. But that book will be there as well.
Oh, well, I think that's very moving to do these kind of stories. As we know, we're losing so many Holocaust survivors, and mm-hmm. it's wonderful the work that you're doing to help keep the memory alive so that people understand what they went through. And
Yeah. If things aren't written down in a book, and I say all the time, Patsy, that a book is the greatest invention of mankind, forget about sliced bread. You know, we would not be as a society without books. If what we was once learned centuries ago wasn't written down and whatever served as books in those days, you know, it would have gotten forgotten and we would not have the technology and what we have today as a society. And with stories like Undaunted, those life lessons. And what I love most about her story is not only that she survived, but how she survived. She just picked herself up and decided to have a great, fantastic life with no medication, no psychiatrist. You know, she just decided one morning, okay, that was the past. I have my whole life ahead of me. And she's lived a phenomenal life, has a beautiful family. And that's the most powerful part of this story.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. It is.
Yeah, yeah. And it's I don't want to give away the book, but what happens in there, the Dr. Joseph Mengele, the angel of death, some people are mentioned in this book. And it was absolutely horrific what they tried to do to her, take out her ovaries so she wouldn't have any more children. But you know, God stepped in a big way, and she was saved one of her ovaries. And like I said, she has a beautiful family now. But you got to read the book. It will make you cry for sure.
And it's called Undaunted.
Undaunted, yes.
Well, I think, Eli, you always do such a wonderful job with the books that you ghostwrite and the books that you write, you know, for people. And I just admire your work so much.
Thank you so much. And a message to all you listeners who aren't authors yet. Another year is going to pass by without you writing your book. Don't do the same thing in 2018. Write your book. Find a writer's group. Reach out to a ghostwriter in your area. Reach out to Patsy. She'll reach out to me. Get your book done. Don't let 2018 go by like 2017 did. The world needs your book.
Exactly. And I will always be happy to recommend a writer's group for you in the area. You can start just by contacting, for example, right here, Largo Library has wonderful, wonderful resources for you to really get into writing. First, you don't have to spend a lot. Sometimes people say, I have to buy a book about writing and I have to do. No, you can go straight to the library. And we have a wonderful library here in St. Petersburg and also here in Largo and Tampa. Just enjoy the library and learn about what programs they offer there, because they always have writers groups and writers meetings. And it's a way to start. And you're right, Eli, that everybody should. There's a story in everybody. And it's just a wonderful thing if you preserve these memories. And also giving great advice to people. If you know something, like mm-hmm. in Eli's case, he does many business books because people have wonderful ideas of how to improve their businesses. Like right here, Alex Rodriguez with his book, Sell You Before You Sell. And of course, Michael McCoy with his wonderful book, The Picture Perfect Headshot, which I think everybody needs today. This is like an absolute requirement in life to have a perfect headshot. And so you're doing a great job, Eli.
Yeah, it's truly a gift to help people amplify their message. And, you know, again, for you writers out there, you can also go to www.internationalghostwritersassociation.com. We have some courses that you can take that will teach you soup to nuts how I've written best-selling books, how many other people have actually finished their book.
Well, it's a great idea because I do know some local writers here who are really talented, and it's difficult to make enough money with, you know, just writing your own books. So to be a ghostwriter, it's also a lot of fun to be a ghostwriter.
It's phenomenal. The only bad thing is that I have all these voices in my head now. I've written, Patsy, I've written 78 books for others.
And
at this point in time,
they're all there in your head.
Yeah, and I'm like an idiot savant. I know like I know some really cool things that I shouldn't know about all these different things.
Well, I think it's fun. It makes life interesting.
It is a ton of fun, and the biggest joy is when I hand a new author their book. Because again, just because we actually put it down in writing doesn't mean it's our book. It's their content. It's their story. It's their methodology. So when we hand them their book that they're the author of, to see their face. I mean, writing a book is, out of all the people that actually start, less than 1% of people that actually start writing a book actually write it and publish it. So people that do that, it's like climbing Mount Everest. It is a life mission to do. It's epic, and we love to give them their first books.
Okay, so tell us again about the signing and where it is.
December 9th from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. We'll have Alex Rodriguez, who's a best-selling writer, writes in a couple different languages. His book, his first book took off. This one looks to do a little bit better than that one, if that's possible. We have Michael McCoy, who's the headshot guru in the Tampa area and beyond. He goes to London. He's a very humble guy. He's amazing at what he does behind the camera. And we have Lil Barkowski, a lifelong lesbian who wants to teach men how to treat women right. And I've read the book. Trust me, you want this book. It doesn't matter if you're married or not. You don't have to be single to want this book.
Eli, may I say that this is a great gift for that kid you have in the basement you can't get rid of,
yes,
that you'd like to get a date for, or your uncle who's still waiting around. And I do have a website, by the way. It's lilisms.com, L-I-L-I-S-M-S.com, lilisms.
That is a
I have
good,
many weird lilisms.
Wow, you got a good website.
I do. It's going to be fun.
Lilisms. I love that.
There are many of those. My weird quotes are all up there if you want to find out stuff. And the book will be available there shortly.
Yeah, okay. Go get that book gifted to your son.
I have one lady who's already basement. Pre-bought it. She's ready. Wants them out.
And we're very thankful for Karen and Barnes & Noble for the agreement that we have with them. If you haven't been to your local Barnes & Noble store, get off of Amazon. Go there where people work and live and breathe books and give them your business.
Exactly. The enthusiasm is just wonderful. And particularly, of course, we're very lucky here in Clearwater with Karen Didson, who is the community organizer. That is a particularly wonderful Barnes & Noble.
It's true.
I just love to go there on the weekends. It's full of people, and everybody's excited, and to see children running around and looking for books.
A knowledgeable staff. That store in particular is a great book.
It's really great.
A great store.
Absolutely. So, okay. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming in today. It's been wonderful to see you, and I'll try to pop into the signing. I wasn't the last one, I think, and it's always fun. It's always fun to have a book signing. So
yes,
congratulations
absolutely.
To all of you.
Thank you.
Okay. So that's it. And I just want to remind everyone, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. So as Eli said, just get out there and start writing. And next month or in a few months, you might be right here on Joy on Paper talking about your book. And I want to thank, especially I want to thank Big Ed in the control room, who's always so helpful to me and does everything for me. He puts my sign up. He gets me all organized here. And so I want to thank Big Ed. And he's going to salute me, and I'm going to salute him, because I love to be saluted, and I should have been a drill. I should have been a drill instructor in the Marines, because I would have loved it. I just... Okay.
Well, I'll salute you, Patsy. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay. All right. Bye-bye for now.